All right, Reg, how are you doing, my friend? Good? Good, good, good. Get the microphone ready here. All right, sounds good. You all ready to go? Good. So am I. All right. Well, then why don't we just go ahead? All right, my friend, put it down in the book. Episode 458. 458. Is that right? 458? Wow. 458.
458-2300.
458. All right. Let's do the Star Smile Strong, and let's do the... Wait a minute. Whoa. I didn't count it down, my friend. A quick trigger finger there. All right. Here we go. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. And welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNradio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. Don't forget to subscribe to this podcast or rate this podcast, but most of all, get out there and tell your friends about this podcast. Spread the word. Tell your friends, tell your family, tell anyone who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. That loyalty and devotion, always appreciated. Of course, if you like what you've been hearing for the past 2 weeks, or the past 2 years, or the past 9 years since we've been doing this podcast in May of 2016, then you can always listen to previous episodes to find out where we've been so you know where we're going. Go to WGNradio.com, hit the podcast prompt, then hit the prompt for this specific podcast, and there you will find podcast after podcast after podcast. Just keep scrolling down and loading more. All there for your podcast entertainment pleasure. Welcome to episode number 458. 458. Wow, we're getting close. Another one of those zeros at the end. 458. We're almost at 460. The countdown to 500 is in full swing. So, well, have you been watching? It's impossible not to see what has been happening over the last couple of months. If you look up in the sky, it's a bird, it's a plane, it's Superman. Superman, who from a... I used to love the old Superman shows with George Reeves. They're on a few of the old, some of the cable stations that play old things. I think there's like a Hero and Icon network. Every Saturday and Sunday, they have the Adventures of Superman with George Reeves. It's great. And it's really horribly and corny, and the special effects are terrible, but there's something charming about its cornballness, if that's a word. And who, disguised as Clark Kent, mild-mannered reporter for a great metropolitan newspaper. but yeah, if you look up in the sky, it's a bird, it's a plane. Well, I don't know. Is it a plane up in the air anymore? Wow, what has been going on with air flight in America lately? I mean, that's one of the things that we have always prided ourselves on in this country, was the safety of our air system. Yes, we have seen and read about plane disasters around the world. And most of the time, sadly, it's not the technology of the plane. It is pilot error. whether it's the pilot, you know, or it's human error. I shouldn't say pilot error. It's human error. Many times it is pilot error, but no. It's human error. We're seeing things happening at the towers. We're seeing things happening, yes, in the cockpit. We're seeing other planes, the air traffic controllers. We're seeing people. All of a sudden, as I've said many times already in this year, we're basically now 2 months into this year, and it has been pretty chaotic in many ways, right? In many, many ways. Wow, this is no longer a sleepy Joe country. You got to stay up on your toes. There's something happening every minute. And one of the most distressing things, though, is these airline mishaps. Some have been fatal, and some have been horrendously close to being very fatal as well, and horrific. And within, as I said, the last couple of months, every week or so, we're seeing, I mean, now we might be a little more hypersensitive and there's a little more reporting, but certainly ever since the airliner that was landing in Washington in early and mid-January crashed with a military helicopter, killing everyone, which was just a horrific, horrific event, and we're still finding out what happened there, and it's not going to be easy. And I hope we get the true answers, because wow, that's scary. But then what, about a week and a half later after that or so, or a couple of days after that, what was it then this private plane, this medevac kind of plane, went down in a Philadelphia neighborhood. And we have had some other near misses. Look what happened up in Canada. The plane actually flipped over, and miraculously, no one was killed. I don't know if you saw that footage. Recently here in the Chicago area at Midway Airport, a major, huge plane, I don't know what size it was, but it was a major Southwest airline plane landing and ready to touch down and just, you know, stay on the runway. And then suddenly you see the plane head back up because there's a private plane crossing in the way of the landing plane. If that Southwest airline pilot had not been completely in the zone and aware and attentive, that would have been another horrific, I don't even know if you can call them accidents anymore. I don't know. We might need a new word. But something's going on. And we need to fix that, because the airline industry in this country is not only has been one of America's pride and joys of how well we handle our aviation system in terms of crashes and potential deaths, and so few of them over the years, that this is what's making things kind of feel a little antsy, because things have always been, yes, there's been accidents throughout the years. There was one here almost 40 some years ago in the Chicago area that was a major one at O'Hare. I remember I was still in high school. I was playing baseball, and we came back to the school, and we were told that there was a major plane crash at O'Hare. And that really wasn't that far. I didn't live far from O'Hare Field at the time. And so, wow, you know, that was so few and far between. Of course, you know, a few years ago we had that, crash landing in the Hudson River with Captain Sully. Thankfully, no one was injured there. But what a rescue effort that was, and what a great piece of flying that he was able to put that plane down in the water and save the passengers. But some of these and now, especially today, the thing that's making it more urgent is not only have there been deaths, the one in Washington, everybody on the plane, as well as everyone in the helicopter dead, the one in Philadelphia, the private plane, everybody dead. So we're having casualties now. But also, you have to think about it. Now, once again, we are in a visual society. And it's one thing to read about a near miss, or it's one thing to read about a plane crash. And I don't know, I don't care how well it's described through words. I've said many times, we are a visual society. We are a visual animal, and we react most to the visual. And today, as opposed to 50, 60 years ago, or even 20 years ago, there was a time when you needed a camera to take a picture. But today, we are all walking around with cameras in our bags, in our coats, in our pockets. And many of those cameras, even though they are disguised as mild-mannered telephones for a great metropolitan newspaper, they are high-quality phones. In fact, whenever a new phone comes out, a new smartphone is released by anyone, whether it's Apple or anyone else, the major enhancements have nothing to do with the calls or the quality of the phone call. The phone, as I've said many times, we need to change the name of this device. When Steve Jobs introduced this in 2007, it was, people still used phones. The cell phone was still something of a unique item. It was still evolving, but it was mostly small, mostly a flip phone, and people used it. The screens were small, and people used it for one main thing, and that was talking. You still talked on the phone. Texting was just beginning, but it was difficult. The keys were smaller. The screens were smaller. There were some cameras in them, but they weren't as good in terms of the pictures. It might have been good to take a quick picture, but it wasn't something that was of high quality. And the smartphone changed all that. It gave people a bigger screen, easier to manipulate with your fingers, touch screen. It looked cool. It was a bigger face, a high quality camera for the time. Now 15, 16 years later, 18 years later, really, much, much better. Some of the best cameras we have are in phones now. obviously the texting, function has replace the talking function on a phone. And so what's making these plane crashes a little more scary is that now, most likely, we will have footage of the plane crash, which we've never really had before. Sometimes we've gotten lucky. There was a camera for some reason around, or someone was taking pictures, but that was few and far between. Most of the times when there was plane crashes, we would just read about them. We didn't see them. Now we are seeing the crashes. We are seeing the explosion. We're seeing how horrendous and scary a plane crash can be, how violent that plane crash in Toronto. I mean, the plane just kind of fell quickly on its belly, and boom, there was a fireball. The Washington one, even though it was dark and the footage was from far away, you could actually see the light of the plane from a distance, and you could see the moving helicopter. And when it hit, you saw this flash of light, and then you saw the object of the major plane just literally falling down. Same thing with the Philadelphia. We now have cameras everywhere. The reality of a plane crash is becoming more obvious to us. We are seeing it. We're not just reading about it or imagining it. When a few years ago, when the door of a plane flew off in midair, people had phones. People had cameras. They're taking a picture of the door of the hatch blown out and the air blowing into the plane. We never would have had that before. But now, not only do we have it, we're having it almost instantly. Because everybody has a camera, and somebody is going to take a picture of something. So not only are these plane crashes and these near misses seem to be happening more frequently, but also it's becoming more of a fear factor for people, because not only are we hearing about them, not only are there now been casualties, a lot of times we're hearing about near misses, wings are clipping each other on the runway or something, but now we're hearing about casualties and fatalities more often involved with planes. And we are seeing the actual events happening. And let's face it, you know, it's a major leap of faith when we get on a plane, right? I mean, it's a major leap of faith. You know, we like to be in control of everything in our lives, even though life is such a random crapshoot. We like to feel as if we have some control over what happens to us. And then things happen like this, and we realize that we don't. But then we put that away, because if we recognized and fully appreciated the randomness of life, we'd never leave our house. We'd never even want to wake up. That's why animals are so built on instinct. They are turning their heads at every minute. You know, we've got a cat, Grimsby, and she is always looking around. I mean, she's got the easiest life on earth here. You know, we don't have any kids. We spoil her to death. She is never in harm's way. She is always taken care of. She is always made comfortable. I mean, she's living the life of a queen here. And yet, she's always, even when she's laying on a blanket somewhere, she's still looking around. Animals know the randomness of life. We, being thinking beings, thinking animals with logic and ability to reason, we like to filter things out. We don't like to feel that we're just in a random kind of a world here. And that's the thing that scares a lot of people about flying, even though, as they always say, you know, flying is the safest mode of transportation in terms of the amount of accidents, the amount of injuries or fatalities. Because, yeah, I mean, think about it. On a normal plane, I mean, they're gauging it on how many people fly and how many people are hurt or killed every year based on how many fly. And so the percentage is very low as opposed to how many people are hurt or killed who drive cars. There's no question about that. Yet we like to get and drive in our car because we feel in charge, even though it's a much riskier and more dangerous enterprise. We feel more comfortable behind the wheel. Oh, I'll drive there. if you take the money aspect out of the flight as opposed to driving, there's some people say, well, I'm going to drive. I'm not going to fly. They may give you some reasons, but I think a major reason is the failing of control that we have when we drive, for instance, in a car, as opposed to going in a plane. Now, look, I'm a frequent flyer. I've been flying on planes since I was a young kid. My parents took me on planes as a young kid. We went on some really cool vacations. So I'm used to flying, and I have no fears of it. I enjoy the experience because I think about the flight as more of a means to get to somewhere cool, somewhere different, somewhere interesting, somewhere escape factor from every day. So I have never had a fear of planes. I've been in some times when there has been some major turbulence where it's been like, whoa, where we're really shaking for a while. But I've never been in a real serious moment where those little masks have ever come down, you know, the oxygen masks. I've never been in that. I've been in a few interesting experiences. A few years ago, I was flying from Chicago to Indianapolis, which is like not even an hour flight. And so for some reason, it was taking longer than it should have. And we could feel that we were circling a little. And there was a few times when it felt like we were ready to land. And then I look out the window and we're back up in the clouds. And I'm trying to figure out something's going on. You know, this isn't even an hour flight, if that. And now it's been over an hour and a half. And we're still in the clouds. And they're not telling us anything about, well, yeah, we're waiting. There's, you know, traffic at the airport and something like that. And finally, when the pilot came on, she said, well, we tried to land two times, but there are these wind gusts that are just not allowing us to safely land. And so we are already on our way back to Chicago, and we'll be landing in 20 minutes. What? Everybody's like, whoa, what? You know, so that was probably the strangest thing I've had happen. I've had some really bad turbulence, but thankfully nothing of a near miss or something like that. But my point is, when we get on a plane, we are surrendering our control completely to someone else. And to something else. We are surrendering our control to the pilots, usually two. We are surrendering our control to the technology of the plane. We are surrendering our safety to the competence of the mechanical crew who are doing the checks to make sure that the plane is safe to fly as we continue. We are putting our hands in-air flight crew, the flight attendants. We are basically surrendering all control. We walk on the plane and we sit down. And we don't do anything else to get us where we're going. There are several layers of people who we have, whether we realize it or not, we have given our control to. And it's quite a social contract when you think about it. I don't think we really sit down and think about that when we get on a plane. It's an interesting contraption. As much as I have flown in my life, I'm a frequent flyer. I've flown over 1 million miles. I have my little My little card that says I'm a million mile flyer. And so I've flown literally, you know, 20 hours in a plane at one, you know, I mean, there's been stops, but I mean, I've flown around, not around the world, but through places, far places, Australia, Africa, Europe, Hawaii, you name it. I've gone to far places. So I have willingly given up control and put my faith in those professionals. And I've said this many times. That's the way I look at things. I mean, certainly, I mean, hey, I drive my car. We all like to be in control, but there are some times when you have to say, look, I'm gonna, you know, I don't know how to fix. I said I call the guy. If I've got a plumbing problem, I call a plumber. If I've got an electric problem, I call an electrician. If I have whatever, I call the pro. I put my faith in the professional. And it's the same way with getting on a plane. And we all do that. We might not think about it all that much. But that's what we're doing. We're really giving away our control. And so that's a great, and I think that, and to their credit, the people that work in the airline industry, I believe that they feel a huge responsibility to us and on themselves because of the complete confidence and faith that we are putting in their expertise. When you think about all the layers of people that are involved in getting a plane to take off and get you from point A to point B, it's really an impressive operation. I know that we say, oh my God, everybody doesn't, you know, nobody wants to pack their bag, you know, well, nobody wants to check their bags because, oh, you got to wait at the baggage claim for 5 minutes. Oh, or 10 minutes, or 15 minutes. You've just been on a plane for 5 hours, and you can't wait 15 more minutes. But, you know, the way people are, once again, our psychology. So, but think about, I mean, there's been times, like I said, well, we went on a safari a couple of years ago to Africa. And we checked our bags in Chicago, Illinois. And I saw them go on the conveyor belt. And we stopped at a couple of different stops before we got to Johannesburg, South Africa. And sure enough, there came that same bag that 20 hours ago I had checked at O'Hare, and there it was with me in Johannesburg, South Africa, halfway around the world. We could talk all we want about, oh, they lost my bag. Oh, it takes so long for my bag. But for the most part, you get your bag. And it's an amazing system when you think about all the bags that are being checked every minute on all these flights every day. If, you know, being raised here in Chicago, living in Chicago, a busy big airport is par for the course for me. When I go to a smaller city and I see some of these smaller airports, I'm like, wow. It's like there's no chaos. Because O'Hare is one of the busiest airports in the world. It's a major hub, and people are flying in and flying out and going to destinations and coming back, or they are using Chicago as a stop and a layaway to go somewhere else, or a layover to go somewhere else. When you think about all the planes and all the bags and all the people that are moved in and out of those airports and into other airports and off to their destinations, it's almost like an ant farm when you think about it. And yes, there are glitches in the system, and I have certainly experienced those. I've had flights canceled. I had to sleep over in airports. Believe me, if you travel enough, you will never be immune from all of those things. I've slept on cots in airports. I've slept in chairs. I've been delayed 6 hours, 7 hours. I've sat on runways for 3 hours. If you travel enough, it will happen to you. Yes, it is a pain in the butt when it happens. Yes, it is a huge inconvenience. Yes, I've missed flights, connecting flights, things like that. I've had bags lost. I've had them all. Thankfully, I never, as I said before, thankfully I never had any kind of a real close call of a dangerous thing. But the possible pitfalls in the entire process, I've experienced them all, and yet I still fly. And what I find interesting now is I just wonder, because there seem to be not only more accidents having happened in the last couple of months, but now with the media attention, there's more attention to any near miss. Because now air flight is in the zeitgeist. Air flight is an issue. We're hearing about horrendous flights or horrendous crashes with losses of life. And so now it's on the top of mind. So the media now is more aware of whenever there's some report of a close call or something, that's going to get reported now. 6 months ago, I tell you what happened in the newsroom. 6 months ago, there was a near miss. A couple of planes came within, 500 feet of each other in the air or, on the runway. And the first question the editor would say, was anybody hurt or killed? Was anything happened? No. Well, okay. I mean, if we have room for it, whether it's in the newspaper or on television, we'll put it in. But as long as there was nothing negative about it, yeah, close call is scary, but it's not. Well, that now has changed. If there is that same kind of a near miss or even something that was a little out of the ordinary, but there and still were no casualties, no fatalities, no one hurt, no planes touched or crashed. It was just two planes were sort of going to go on the same way, and then one stopped, and there was a potential for a thing. 6 months ago, that probably wouldn't have been reported. Now, given what was it's happening now, that will be reported. So you're going to start to hear for a while until this kind of settles down. You're going to hear more about the close calls that happen. Now, have there always been that many? And we're just hearing about more of them? Have there been that many close calls? And now, because of our cell phones, like I said, our cell cameras, that's what they should be called. Because we all have a camera, because we're seeing more of these near misses, we're seeing the actual footage of it, and now the TV stations can run that. So are there more near misses than there used to be? Or are there more near misses that we are seeing and hearing about because of the technology and because of the attention now given to air flight? It's kind of a mixed bag. You get one with the other. But my question, and if you've been listening to this podcast for any period of time, you'll know a couple of years ago, I did a whole podcast, and it's probably still, you can probably download it. You have to go through the list there. As I always say, scroll down and load more. But the topic that I had was not just about air travel. It was about things in general. About 2 or 3 years ago on this podcast, I was just observing how it seemed like there were a lot more accidents, and I'm doing the air quotes now, there are a lot more accidents happening. There was a lot more, there was like a breakdown in our processes, things that had never happened before, mistakes that people were making more mistakes in crucial or critical or dangerous types of jobs that we never saw. It was almost if people were not being as attentive to their jobs, we were seeing more accidents. We were seeing more mistakes happen that were leading to either fatalities or close calls, enough to say, what's going on? And I had mentioned, and my view at that time was, well, I don't know. You know, it seems like, you know, in today's society, you know, people get jobs because they need to make a living. But it seems like a lot of people in the workforce today are still waiting to become celebrities. They're still waiting for their moment to become an influencer or a reality star or something like that. As I said, the smartphone really unleashed and tapped into the worst of our personality, which is narcissism. It's always been there. But now narcissism is encouraged rather than discouraged. And it's basically because of the capabilities of the smartphone and the realities of social media. Look, we've always been a celebrity-driven society. I'm not saying that. We've always been obsessed with celebrities. People have always wanted to be rich and famous. That's all, as I said, it plays to our narcissism. But there, before social media, there was a process. And the people that found that type of fame and success usually went into that business and usually took a big risk because it is a crapshoot and many didn't make it and some did. But there was kind of an established process. But in today's world, because of social media, we're seeing the idea of celebrity, the idea of privilege or access today in today's society is not gained through hard work or experience. It's basically earned through complete chance in many ways. There's still some people that do it the old-fashioned way, but not many. Now there was no such thing as a reality star. If you were a celebrity, if you were an actor or an actress, you worked, you went to school, you went to acting school, you were waiting tables, you were auditioning 10 times a day, and you were hoping for that break to get on a TV show or a movie, and some people got it and some people didn't. But today there's reality shows. Online, TikTok, we're seeing celebrity, and I put that in air quotes, being handed out without the back story of it, without the hard work. So there's some people that are looking around the society today and saying, look, I mean, I'll take this job, but I really want to be an influencer. I really want to go online and I want to review roller coasters around the country and make money from it. Yeah. Well, everybody wants to do that, I guess. So when that person has their other job in order to sustain themselves, to pay their rent, they're really not thinking about the responsibilities of that job as much as the thing they really want to do, which is become famous and popular and viral. So celebrity today has been greatly diluted. And for some people, though, it's a flash in the pan and it's a temporary thing because we have such a fast-paced news cycle today and there's a very low attention span, so we're always looking for the next shiny object. But I just wonder, is we've got a whole generation now that grew up with the title of influencer as a job, and yet I don't know if there's ever any real training, any real experience for that. You've seen, I mean, she's sort of fallen out of favor now. But perfect example is in the last 6 months, there was this young woman called the Haktua girl. Did you hear about this? And this was basically a random woman, young woman in her 20s, who was interviewed on the street for some social media TikTok thing or whatever it was. There's all these people that go around now that all ask people questions and they're trying to be make viral things. And this girl made a interesting, let me just say, an interesting comment about a certain sex act. And it went viral. And suddenly she was an instant celebrity. Endorsements, podcasts, you name it. Now, she's kind of fallen from grace because ultimately she doesn't have any talent to sustain this. But she got this opportunity from pure chance, like a lottery. But younger people see this and go, hey, that's what I want to do, even if it's short-lived because we're so hungry for attention. As I said many times, we're to look at me, society. And what I fear is that is this is getting so, because our narcissism is so strong in us that we're really not paying attention to the things that we need to pay attention to when we're at our jobs, especially if it's a serious job. Now, I understand there's staffing shortages and things like that, but we're just seeing a lot of mistakes happen now more often. My God, the last 2 months have been crazy. Mistakes made in security during New Year's Eve in New Orleans. Mistakes made about the in about the planes and the helicopter, whether it was an air traffic controller problem, whether it was a pilot error, whether it was a technology or equipment error, we don't know yet. But there were errors made, and it seems like these errors made could have been avoided. Now, look, we're all human. We all make mistakes. But when you are in a high-pressure, high-responsibility job, you can't afford to do that. It's, I know it's not fair. But then we try to put safeguards in there. And I just wonder now, with all of the air problems, are people getting jittery? I have no idea how a plane. It's hilarious. I've been on, as I said, I've flown all around the world. I've flown on planes, you know, for business and pleasure for, you know, the last 40, 50 years. I still don't understand how the hell it works. They explain it to me, and I watch these shows, and they're talking about the lift, and they're talking about it's still past my grasp. I guess if I really sat down and had a pilot and I really focused on it, I would understand it. I'm not saying I can understand it. I'm saying I haven't really taken the time to fully grasp it. I'm sure that if I did, I could, but I still haven't. And yet, this is my point. But I still, hey, let's get on that plane. Because in my view, there's other people who are the pros who know what they're doing. And as I said, it's a huge leap of faith. It's a huge handing over of control, which we are not used to. And I just wonder if the average person is going to be a little more hesitant now, because we're hearing and especially seeing more of these, either these crashes or these near misses that are happening. And, you know, there's some people that, you know, flying is a part of their lives, especially for business, or, you know, personal side. As I said, I enjoy traveling, always have. But I wonder for the, I mean, if you go on a plane lately, I mean, yes, there's fewer flights, so most of the flights are always filled now. There were times back in the 90s where I would be on a plane, a big plane, like a 737, and there would be seven people on the plane. No lie. I mean, they used to fly planes with five or six, seven, eight, ten people on it. It would hold 100 and something. And after 9/11, you know, the entire aviation business in America shifted. And that's now why we have less direct flights. We have more layover flights. That's why we have more people missing flights, because now it's hard to get a direct flight in many cases. Because the airlines are like, hey, we can't just keep flying these planes, which are gas guzzlers. We're charging this person, you know, $200 to fly, and we're not making any. We're not even paying for 5 minutes of gas with the amount of people on it. So every plane you go on now today is pretty much full, because they have figured out that they don't how many people will fly for the most part to these certain destinations in order that there are not empty flights. But I remember in the 90s getting on big planes from major cities, and there's 10 people on the plane. It was hilarious. But as I said, I wonder now, with so many people flying, so many people traveling, some people have been doing it for a long time, are used to it. It's a new thing to some people, is air flight has become a little more affordable, or people are just more willing to say, you know what, I'm going on a vacation, whether I can really afford it or not. You know, there 40, 50 years ago, I mean, going on vacations like people go today, that was unheard of. The average person was not going on those kind of things. Now you're hearing, oh yeah, went to the Philippines, went to Australia, went to Vietnam. You're like, whoa, what the heck? Some people wouldn't even go from Chicago to Disneyland. That was a big deal. Or New York, woo! Now that's not even a thought. So more people are traveling, no question. But the question now is, will people continue to fly, at least in the short term, because of all this? It's a legitimate worry, but it's also something that I think we as a country need to really address. We can't have our airline industry untrustworthy. We can't have that. And I just hope that perhaps because of all these accidents that we've seen, or these near misses, that we will start to take a step back and either hire the right people, or the people that have these jobs will really begin to feel more of a responsibility to the jobs they have than the jobs or lives that they want. If you're in that job, hey, look, when I was in high school, I used to work at a grocery store, at a major grocery store chain, as a bagger and then as a cashier. Now, I knew that I didn't want to do that for the rest of my life. I knew that that wasn't going to be my career. It is for some people. Some people go up through the ranks. They become store managers, or they become heads of the service area, or they become big executives. Hey, they were working in that industry. They enjoyed it. They did well at it, and they made it their career. That's fantastic. I knew that that was a part-time job for me while I was in high school and college. I wasn't going to make my career out of it. But the difference is, when I showed up to work for the four-hour shift or the six-hour shift. It's a part-time job. When I showed up for my shift, my attention was in that job. I was doing the best job I could in that job. I wasn't, you know, once again, we didn't have cell phones. I mean, I mean today I see cashiers at the in the stores literally checking their phones in between orders. Unheard of. We never could do that. We would totally get in trouble or probably fired. You were expected to be on the job while you were on the job. Your attention was to the job. You were supposed to always be busy doing something. And I see a lot of people not paying attention. They're at their job, but I don't know how well they're really invested in it. And when it comes to air flight, if you're in any kind of job at any level, and there's no such thing as a low-level job in the airline industry, because every layer is important. The people that are driving the trucks to either fix the planes, or they're driving the little vehicles to pick up the baggage. You are valuable. We are counting on you. And I hope that this sudden rash of accidents in the airline industry is maybe just a coincidence that they're all happening. Maybe it's an anomaly. We are humans. We make mistakes. Maybe it's just that they're happening more often than they would have, and maybe this will just slow down. I don't know, but I hope that it's more accidental and an anomaly than it is because we're not paying attention, especially in the air, because, as I said, we, the passenger, are surrendering our control, our safety to those professionals. And I do believe that they are dedicated to that. I hear pilots talk. It's our job to make sure that we get our passengers from point A to point B. I'm not saying that people do not do their jobs, but what I'm hoping is that we've got a attention and a focus when we're at our job. I'm not talking about, you know, killing your dreams. If there's something else you want to do, then I would say go do it. But when you're at a job, especially something like an air travel, The average passenger, as I said, gives so much of their control, so much of their faith to you. And I hope that the people in the airline industry have and understand that commitment. Yeah, I know job's a job, and there's some days you just don't feel like going. I get it. But there are some jobs where you have to be able to put that aside. If you're the person who's in charge of the nuclear buttons or nuclear power, some, you know what? You have to be focused. If you can't be, then find something else to do. Because now we're seeing some major problems happening here. And I hope to God that doesn't happen, because as much as it's a pain in the butt to go to the airport now and all these people, What I am actually being a traveler. There's a part of me that says, "Oh my God, there's so many people on this plane. We got to wait. You know, the baggage. You know, the airline. You know, the carry-ons and all. I mean, all the pitfalls that we know. The long lines, TSA, blah blah blah. All that. Hey, look, I'm not better than anybody else. You know, I get aggravated too. But there's also a part of me that when I see all these people getting on planes and going to different places, I say, wow, there are a lot of people that are getting some cool experiences, whether they're visiting family that they maybe wouldn't have seen, they wouldn't have seen before, whether they're going on, you know, once in a lifetime vacations, or they're going on a regular, whatever it is. I'm like, wow, there are people that are, you know, they're getting out there. They're seeing the world. And that's something that I have always enjoyed. And I'm actually glad that other people are doing it too. Because I know it's enriched my life. So as much as I hate to see a plane that's full, because I know it's going to take me a long time to get on and get off and get my bags and blah, blah, blah. But there's also the traveler part of me, the human part of me that sort of takes a step back and says, wow, you know. So often I remember when I was a little kid, people say, we can't, you know, there's some cousins that live, you know, blah, blah, blah. We never see them. I don't know if that's the case anymore. You just hear about people visiting family, going to different places, going on vacations, going to exotic or out of the way destinations. It's not just Disneyland and Disney World and the Grand Canyon. We have become our world has become bigger to us. And I think that's a good thing. We're expanding our view of the world, and we want to get out there and experiencing. I think that's great. But be able to do that from a travel standpoint, you're going to have to get on a plane. And I hope that whatever is happening, whether this is an anomaly or whether this is a trend, which I hope it isn't, but we can't afford to have our airline industry something that people are jittery about. You know, 40 or 50 years ago, I would laugh because I remember when I was a little kid, you know, air flight was still a new thing to the average person in the 70s and even in the early 80s. As I said, it wasn't like today. People are, of all age groups and even economic strata, are traveling on planes today. That wasn't the case all the time. And there was a fear of air travel. There were a lot of crashes, especially, you know, high profile crashes that people read about in the newspaper with either celebrities or, you know, a lot of times in foreign countries, you'd hear about this, especially more than in the United States. When planes would land, and this was into the 90s, when air travel was fairly sophisticated at this point, people would clap when the plane landed because there was such a relief, like, oh, they actually clapped. And then that stopped because it became like, well, okay, yeah, you know. And every so often over the years, I'd be on a plane and I would hear a few little claps and I'd have to laugh like, oh, they're clapping because it laughed. Most people today are more used to air travel. We're used to being it safe. And so there wasn't that anxiety. I had a friend of mine that I used to travel with on business. And we traveled quite a bit on planes. Sometimes, you know, at least once a week. And she would, one time I saw her do it when we first started to travel on business, because we were on a lot of the same business accounts, and we'd be on the same planes, and I would see her literally, you know, take her two fingers, kiss them, and touch the plane as a kind of a, you know, please get me. And if I was sitting next to her, I would watch her hands. She would hold on and she would fly a lot, but you could just see there was a little anxiety. And as I said, people used to clap like, oh, hooray for the pilot. You got us here. As if this was a coin flip, whether we were going to make it or not. And then that kind of went away. And now I just wonder, are people feeling that anxiety? Are we going to see the average person take a step back from flying? You know, hey, I flew less than a month after 9/11. I flew to New York, in fact. Ground Zero. Actually saw Ground Zero about less than a month after it had happened. But I flew from Chicago to New York less than 3 weeks or so after 9/11, right? So now, I mean, that, don't forget, you know, planes stopped flying, and there was a lot of hesitancy. Everybody's very paranoid. Is something going to happen to this plane? But, you know, you always hear, well, you know, if you change your life, you let those terrorists, whatever you want to call, you know, win. But for me, it wasn't even that kind of a statement. There were things I needed and wanted to do, and that was the way to get there. And so I, in my view, I was like, hey, if the planes are flying, I'm going. And that's the way I've always felt. That's the way I still feel. I do not have any apprehension about this. But I just wonder now, with more people beginning to fly, who maybe aren't as used to flying as long, as many years as I have, will they be hesitant? I'd hate for that to happen because, A, it would be a reflection about how well we can make the airline industry, how efficient we can make it. But as I said before, it would also show that some opportunities to enrich people's lives would be cut off. You maybe wouldn't be able to go visit Grandma and Grandpa or Uncle Tom or Uncle Sam or Uncle Betty. You might not be able to go to Disneyland or to the Grand Canyon or to Paris or to Hawaii or to wherever you want to see or what you want to see. And I think you would be missing something if you didn't even at least have that option, if it was an option to you. But the fear factor and that hesitancy to give up that control, of which I've been talking about here, to give that ultimate faith in somebody and in this system. It's a huge social contract, and I hope that we can clean this up and find out where the glitches are in this system, because we can't have our air system become something that people are leery of or fear, because it does provide a great opportunity for us to go far distances, to enrich our lives, and to see things. And so I hope that we can, that if this rash of accidents and near misses, if these are really glitches in the system, then we need to make sure that we can review those systems and make sure those don't occur. If there are people in the industry working on a day-to-day basis, hopefully this is a wake-up call to them to say, okay, you know, I need to focus more on my responsibility and my job when I'm here. If I have other interests or I have other goals, that's fine. I can pursue them. But when I'm here, man, I have a real important job. There are lives at stake here. And I need to pay attention. Whatever the glitches are, whether they're human errors, whether they're system errors, whether they are technology errors, whatever it is, I hope that the airline industry can rally, be transparent, and be honest with itself, and bring it back to a level where the confidence is there, where the average person feels confident to give up that control, because they are confident that the professionals who we are trusting to get us from point A to point B will do their jobs. From the mechanics to the baggage claim people, to the people at the gate that check us in, to the TSA people, to the pilots, you name it. I have great respect for people that work in the airline industry. Those people have helped enrich my life. They have helped make my life very interesting and very worth living and exciting. And they have helped me make memories. And I want to make sure that there's other people that can also experience that. So this is one frequent flyer who is still going to froth. I had this line so good. This is one frequent flyer who will continue to fly frequently. There you go. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. And don't forget to tell your friends, tell your family, tell anyone who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. Hope you enjoyed episode number 458. I'm Jim Toronto, and here on business, I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. From the end of my mind to your ears.